The Minnesota House Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform for the 92nd legislative session will come to order. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Present.
Vice Chair Frazier. Vice Chair Frazier.
Present.
Lee Johnson.
Present.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Grossel.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Lucero.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller, present.
Representative Novotny.
Novotny, present.
Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Representative Vang.
Present.
Representative Chung.
Present.
And that concludes roll call.
Very well. Quorum is present. This hearing is being conducted under Minnesota House Rule 10.01, allowing members to debate and vote by means of distant voting, remote electronic voting, or other means to allow legislative operations while preserving the safety of the public, staff, and members. The hearing may be viewed via the House webcast, and a link is on the committee website page to that. Also, those interested in testifying can email the committee administrator, Mr. Jamel Lundy, 24 hours before a hearing. The email address is also found on the committee website page. members, the first thing we want to do is adopt our minutes, and I believe Representative Hollins may have a motion before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the minutes from February 8th be adopted.
Very well. Members, discussion? All right. Representative Johnson, voice vote, I assume, is good?
That would be fine.
Wonderful. Thank you, sir. All in favor of the Hollins motion to adopt the February 8th minutes of this committee, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the February 8th minutes of this committee are hereby adopted. Members, today we have three bills. We're going to act on two of those, and the third one we're going to have an informational hearing. The bills are sponsored by Representative Mueller, Representative Pinto, and Representative Miller. We're going to begin with Representative Mueller's bill, House File 2910, and Representative Mueller, before you abandon us, you could have moved, made this motion, but we're going to be nice to you anyway, and we'll get someone to move House File 2910. I'm wondering if Representative Frazier would be so kind to move House File 2910 be referred to the Judiciary Committee.
So moved, Chair.
Very well. The motion motion is made. Your bill is before us. Representative Mueller, I know there's an amendment. We can deal with that at whatever point you wish for us to do so. Please tell us about your bill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. If we can, the amendment puts the bill in the order that I prefer. So if we can start with that A1 amendment, that would be great.
Very well. Representative Frazier, would you be so kind as to move the A1 amendment?
So moved, Chair.
Very well. Representative Frazier moves the A1 amendment. It puts the bill in the shape that the author wishes it to be before us. Representative Johnson, I think a voice vote would probably suffice here as well.
That would be fine.
Very well. Thank you, sir. All in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevailed. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Mulder, House File 2910, as amended, is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's really good to be back here today. As you all know, there has been an uptick in carjackings in Minnesota, like there has been across the country. Often those carjackings are accompanied with violence or threats of violence. And along with that, we're also hearing about attempts by law enforcement to stop a person driving a stolen car, only to be met with a dangerous high-speed chase. These chases lead to a risk to public safety, risking the lives of innocent drivers who are on the road, the officers who are trying to stop these cars, and anybody in those stolen cars. And in fact, the Pioneer Press had a report, I believe it was last week, and it mentioned a couple of recent cases. One was from Robbinsdale in December, where officers tried to pull over a vehicle that had been reported stolen in a carjacking. Police say the driver fled and crashed, and there were five juveniles in that car, and sadly, two of them died and the others were injured. In September, two passengers in a stolen car, ages 14 and 15, died when their friend crashed after a Ramsey County Sheriff's deputy tried to pull him over in Maplewood. The article continues, quote, even before those instances, many law enforcement agencies had tightened their pursuit policies, citing safety reasons, close quote. If these high-speed chases are called off due to safety reasons, the suspect is not apprehended and evidence needed for a later prosecution is lost. When I spoke to my local law enforcement about this issue, the Ramsey County Sheriff's Office told me about their desire to use available GPS technology to address this problem, and they're here today to explain that technology. The use of such technology can enable law enforcement to keep their eyes on the stolen vehicle that is fleeing until they can safely apprehend the suspect, while also keeping the public safe from these dangerous high-speed chases. This bill is necessary because even though the Fourth Amendment allows this technology to be used in these types of exigent circumstances, our current statutes make it a gross misdemeanor for law enforcement to use GPS technology on a stolen car that is fleeing unless they have the owner's consent. And I anticipate that my testifier can address any questions on why owner consent is often not practical in these circumstances. That said, I understand concerns about the use of these devices indefinitely and once exigent circumstances have passed. And I want to thank the ACLU for their suggestion regarding putting some time limits into this bill. And after that conversation, I drafted the amendment that you all just adopted that allows for this technology to be used on a reported stolen car for up to 24 hours unless law enforcement secures a court order for continued use beyond that 24-hour period. Finally, I also wanted to ensure that once a stolen car has been recovered and returned to its owner, innocent owners won't be mistaken for car thieves. Thus, paragraphs B and C of the bill ensure that officers must remove the devices upon recovery and that no evidence collected for any reason after that return of the car would be admissible. Mr. Chair, I understand that there is an opposition testifier here with Fourth Amendment concerns, and I'll address those concerns after his testimony. I'd also just like to note that we have support from the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association, Minnesota Sheriff's Association, Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, and the Ramsey County Attorney's Office. And you also have in your packets a handout of support from the National Insurance Crime Bureau. And then Senator Mark Johnson will be carrying the companion bill in the other body. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have my testifier under Sheriff Michael Martin here for you today.
Thank you, Representative Mueller, and thank you for the walkthrough of your bill. Ramsey County Undersheriff Mike Martin, please come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your testimony, please.
I'm Mike Martin. I'm the Undersheriff of the Regional Services Division for the Ramsey County Sheriff's Office. Thank you for having me, Chair Mariani and representatives, and for the invite, Representative Mueller. I appreciate it. In February of last year, we started to see a dramatic increase in violent carjackings that were occurring in the Twin Cities area, and we started working hard to reduce those carjackings. That involved collaborative efforts with agencies across the Twin Cities, and we began tracking information about what was occurring so that we could best address it. We also received a grant from the Department of Commerce that allowed us to do some intervention work with young kids, that as well as some prevention work related to this. As Representative Mueller said, unfortunately, these carjacked cars as well as auto thefts often result in dangerous pursuits or agencies having to terminate when they flee from traffic stops. And we have implemented a process within the sheriff's office where we call registered owners of vehicles to get consent to place GPS or to work with the manufacturers, many of whom already have GPS in place or OnStar or other services for tracking vehicles. Unfortunately, that's oftentimes a cumbersome process and we can't do it in a timely fashion because we can't get a hold of the registered owners. We believe that the ability to place a GPS device or work with the manufacturer's devices will help us to prevent dangerous pursuits. There are technologies out there that allow us to deploy GPS devices onto a car so that we don't have to pursue it, either hand thrown or placed on a vehicle if we can get close enough before we try to stop it. Or there are devices that actually launch a sponge sticky thing that sticks on the car. Then we can back off. We can wait until that car is parked or stationary where we can stop it safely and apprehend the suspects if they're still around. But that's why we support this legislation, is we think that it would help us to reduce the risk to public safety, as well as the mission of recovering stolen vehicles.
Very well. Thank you, sir, for your testimony here today. Representative Mueller, do you have any other testifiers on behalf of your bill?
I don't. There is, I know, an opposition testifier here, but that's it for my bill.
All right. Why don't we pause here? We will hear from the next testifier, but I want to pause here for questions and comments, perhaps directed to Undersheriff Martin and or yourself. And we will begin with Representative Raleigh, and then we'll move to Representative Novotny. Representative Raleigh.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. And I really want to thank the Ramsey County Sheriff's Office for bringing this bill forward and you know, helping to put the language in place. This is a very important tool, in my opinion, to reduce the amount of high-speed pursuits, to put yet another tool into the toolbox of the police officers and sheriffs that are out there. This seems to be really, really a great idea in support of our law enforcement. I do have a question for the author, Representative Mueller, if I could, through the chair, of course. In your amendment, line 1.5, it says that the tracking device to the vehicle must either, they must either remove the device, disable the device, or obtain a court order. So my question is specifically as to the intent of the disable. Would turning off the collection of the data, both the full track data and the metadata that comes out of the device, would turning off the collection of that information, would that constitute disabling of the device? Or do we kind of have to torture ourselves a bit that we physically have to turn it off? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mueller.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for that question, Representative Raleigh. So the intent was behind that is either to physically remove or to stop getting that information. So when you've got those like OnStar kinds of scenarios or the GPS that's actually in the car, then the idea would be that you would, you know, sort of disable in that way where you stop collecting that location information. I do know that speaking with Undersheriff Martin about the other technologies like the actual physical units that can go on the car, that it's tracked more through like an app program. And so even if you couldn't physically remove that right away, the idea is that you wouldn't be like following that location via that app anymore either.
Representative Ollie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's exactly what I was hoping, that the disabling of the collection of the data would fulfill the spirit of the law once it becomes law in disabling the device. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and appreciate it, Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Representative Rowley. Representative Bodney.
Thanks, Chair Mariani. I was actually hoping to speak after Mr. Neumeister.
Oh, okay. We'll keep you on the list then, Representative
Bodney. Thank
you. Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Mueller, I'm just wondering how the 24 hours came up with. I know I've been involved in investigations, and sometimes it can take more than 24 hours to obtain a search warrant, getting all the information, sometimes less. And each county is different. Sometimes the county attorney actually requires to review a search warrant before it's presented to the judge, and every county has different protocols. There are times where the investigation might take more than 24 hours, might be leading to some other things. I've been involved where we did a search warrant and ended up working for 72 hours doing multiple search warrants. So I'm just wondering how you came up with the 24-hour rule.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Johnson, also for that question. And so that was really working with Ramsey County Sheriff's Office and thinking about what the intent is behind this bill. The intent is really to eliminate these dangerous pursuits and really the need for them to be able to do this in a limited time period, because as we're learning about, a lot of these carjackers are stealing cars for like a short period of time and then trading out these cars for other cars. This isn't meant to be a long-term investigation into the driver of that car. If officers have a suspect they want to do that type of long-term investigation for, then they need to get a court order or search warrant or something else, because that's not the intent of this bill. And so speaking with them and what the intent is to use that technology in a limited fashion, they felt like that 24 hours was enough to be able to safely apprehend that suspect. But then if there isn't, they would be able to get that court order. I don't know if Undersheriff, if that answers your question, if you'd like to also hear from Undersheriff Martin.
Chair Mariani.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Mueller, thank you for that information. That does answer my question. I just wanted to make sure that during the investigation, there is time to do the work properly, because we've had some vehicles used in multiple crimes for multiple days after they've been carjacked.
Indeed, Representative Johnson, I have a relative that precisely was the case. Their vehicle was used over a period of several days. On the commission of break-ins with small retails. Representative Mueller, why don't we then move, I'll move forward. I don't see any other hands at this point. Representative Mavadi, I've got you in the queue, but we do have a public testifier, Mr. Neumeister. Always good to see you, sir. Welcome to the committee, and give us your name for the record, and please provide us with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, good afternoon. My name is Rich Neumeister. I have submitted written comments that give you a frame of reference and some background with my specific comments that I'm going to make on the bill. Be aware that mobile tracking devices are regulated by 626A 35 through 39. Been on the books for almost as long as you've been a representative, maybe a little bit longer, Mr. Chairman.
Not possible.
Since 1988 and 89. And it's important to note that there has been no update or modernization of this bill to reflect many of the Fourth Amendment cases that have transpired over the last 20 years. And I think that it is an important thing to do if the bill is going to move forward. Now, let's go right to the bill. You have language on there on 110, the consent of the owner of the vehicle has been obtained. I contend this is duplicative. If you go to 626A35 2A, not 2B, but 2A, it's very clear when the law was made back in 1988 and 89, as it says, with consent of the owner of the object you can place a tracking device on. So you already have the consent. To me, this is duplicative, and I don't think that it is needed. Secondly, when you look then on page 111 and 112, you see the owner of the motor vehicle has reported to law enforcement that the vehicle is stolen. What is it? Is it consent, or is it just when it's reported stolen? I contend that Fourth Amendment protections, which have changed over the last 10, 15 years with technology, I would say that this provision makes it dubious that it meets a Fourth Amendment standard. Now, described by Under Sheriff Martin and Representative Moeller, who I've spoken with about this, we had a half-hour conversation about this bill, you can put exigency standard in. So you could say, you know, under 2A or another 2B for exigency circumstances, because if you're talking for hot pursuits. If you adopt 111 to 112, and with the technology that we now have with license plate readers going by, with lots of hits of stolen cars because they're in the database, or you do a computer check, what? Are you going to put a tracking device? The potential, as I stated in my written testimony, is you could have a lot of tracking devices with a dubious language that you have on 111 and 112. So, and Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I think it's important that consent is important. By adopting 111 and 112, you allow for haphazard, maybe mischief, what other kinds of things is putting a location device on a vehicle. You know, consent is an exception for the Fourth Amendment. It must be freely and clearly given, voluntary, awareness, and right of choice. So I think that's an important thing that the committee needs to consider as this bill moves forward. That language I was telling you about, 111, 112, all of a sudden we have an implied consent. Just because someone says, hey, my car's stolen, where's the documentation if you're going to go down that way? I encourage that is a problem. Now, if you may have known, they didn't talk about the device being used, but a lot of these, why this bill has been implemented in the first place, why it came to the attention, because I spoke with the Ramsey County Sheriff's folks, is of new technology called the Star Chaser, which Ramsey County, as I understand, is going to be purchasing some, where all of a sudden the dart comes out and has a sponge type of GPS. Now, if that's the purpose of what to make the law change for technology, let's just put exigent circumstances in. I think it's bad public policy, and I think it makes a mockery of some of the Fourth Amendment protections of search warrant, probable cause, in these kinds of situations. Now, let's look at the amendment of the 24 hours. So, as I said to you about 111 on page 111 and 112, the dubious section there, where I just report a stolen car, well, then all of a sudden the tracking, if let's say a license plate reader goes ding, ding, oh, that's in our database, let's put the tracker on, or, you know, through a computer check. And then they come 24 hours later, well, we want to put a warrant on there. We want to stand on this for 10 days, 11 days, 15 days, whatever it might be. Again, the beginning of how that happened is dubious in the first place, using that section. I think an exigent or a consent, yes, it does follow the line of, I think, Fourth Amendment policies. Now, I think one of the things that we have to ask ourselves as Minnesotans, as we develop this policy, what is the policy? To recover the car and sit on it as long as you can to see maybe if some crimes happened, or is it to return it to the owner. I say it's more of recover and return. So, Mr. Chairman, I mean, I know it's the time is there. I have spoken with the chief author. I think our laws need to be updated, and she at least heard that, and maybe she might be willing to do that as this bill progresses. But, Mr. Chairman and committee members, I've also shared with you some very distinct weaknesses, I contend, of this bill. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. I'm willing to stand for any questions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Neumeister. Representative Mueller, I can call on Representative Devine, who I think has a question here, or I can have you respond. Whatever order you wish to follow would be fine with me.
Mr. Chair, I'm fine if you want to get to Mr. or Representative Novotny first, and then I can respond.
Very well, thank you. Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. As always, it's good to hear Mr. Neumeister's take on things, and several times I wanted to wait several times in this situation. I agreed with you. I think in the end, I kind of still agree with you on a couple of things, but in the end, let's keep in mind that these cars are reported stolen. If they are entered as stolen, at this point, they are evidence. The 24-hour monitoring, as Under Sheriff Martin has testified, gives them time to move forward, get that search warrant attached. The hope would be, I feel, in almost all these situations, is that as we've seen this explosive growth, explosive incurrence in fleeings, that if the vehicle does take off, that they'll be able to get it once it goes to the ground, so to say. But if they don't have to have that chase, then they don't have to worry about the threat to the public and themselves. I follow Officer Down nationwide statistics, and being in a pursuit is one of the leading causes of deaths in law enforcement officers, and anything we can do to avoid that, I think, is important. I think the safeguards that have been agreed to by all of the parties with the 24 hours is a good follow-up. And like I said, most of the time, I would suspect this is a case where the vehicle will be apprehended within that 24 hours. And if not, then we've got somewhere to go from there. If we don't have it, we don't have that tracking data attached, or the tracking devices attached, then that opportunity is lost. So with that, Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Abdi. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to respond to some of the comments by the testifier, who I do appreciate, we did have a great conversation the other day. I will say, and I've talked to this committee before about the fact that I'm a prosecutor. You're probably sick of me saying that, but I handle appeals, felony level appeals, and I've done that work for over 20 years. So I have a very good handle on the Fourth Amendment. And one thing that really distinguishes this situation from the case law that Mr. Neumeister is talking about and that he attached as handouts here is the fact that we're dealing with somebody who stole a car. And under the Fourth Amendment, it's very critical that you have a reasonable expectation of privacy and even standing to raise a Fourth Amendment issue. And in those cases, the car where the court said that GPS tracking is a search, those cars were being driven by either the owner or someone the owner gave permission to. Again, we have a very different situation here when we're talking about somebody who's carjacked a car. And I did verify that with nonpartisan staff. I wanted to make sure that my read on that was accurate. And I know if members have questions, we can call on them to ask about that as well. I will say as well that I think Mr. Neumeister makes a very good point about the need to modernize and update these statutes. And I'm certainly willing to do that. However, I don't want that to hold up using this statute now, because we're in an urgent moment and we're here to meet that moment right now. And this statute does that in a very narrow and careful way. So that's all I wanted to say in response to his testimony.
Very well. And Mr. Neumeister, I will have you respond to some of the responses to your testimony, but I do also want to get to Representative Pinto, who has his hand up at this point. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just, as somebody who charges cases involving fleeing motor vehicle and theft of motor vehicle aggravated robbery, which is what carjacking situations are, I'll just say thank you to the undersheriff and then especially to Representative Mueller for advancing this. It seems like a really good approach. And so many thanks to both of you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Neumeister, comments, thoughts, reactions to any of the comments just made in response to your testimony?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm obliged to you for just a moment or two here.
Sure.
I do think that the bill needs to be narrowed to the points that are being discussed. Hot pursuit, exigent circumstances. I contend that if you see a car on the street and you know it's stolen and you put a tag on it, that doesn't fly either policy-wise or I think the Fourth Amendment. You know, I'm not a lawyer. I know that lawyers have different perspectives and different views, and that's why we have the courts to do that. So if the bill was going to go, what I would suggest, exigent exception, adopt that to 626A, 2A, or, you know, or new 2B, or, you know, right to A, would be for exigent circumstances. I just believe that in the long run, where you have 111 and 112, it's going to go, it might be used as a basis. Oh, we see a stolen car, let's put a tag on it. And then I think it's going to develop into other situations. So, Mr. Chairman, those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeister. I don't know if I'll have a chance to preside with you again this year, but I just want to express my gratitude to you for the many decades of your presence here while I have served here and providing. We haven't always agreed, but you've always provided straight up and honest advice from your perspective in terms of your defense of our privacy laws, and I do appreciate that.
And I thank you for being a good representative, because you are my representative.
Indeed. Proud downtown resident, Mr. Neumeister. All right, very well. Mr. Neumeister, this bill, the motion will be to send it to Judiciary, where I think there may be some further vetting, perhaps, on some of the issues that you raised. I do see Representative Lucero has his hand up, so I'll call on you, sir, and then we're going to move to Representative Mueller's closing comments and then a vote on the bill. Representative
Lucero. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is to the bill author. In her description of this bill, and I appreciate the background, and I think it was in the bill summary, or maybe it was Representative Mueller who said that the number of daily carjackings is 23 now across Minnesota. And in her, I don't remember if that number, if she said that or if I heard that number somewhere else. So, or maybe it was an article I read today. I don't remember. But anyway, I heard the number 23 per day somewhere. And in Representative Mueller's description, she suggested one of the drivers for this is the uptick in carjackings. And then in the from the Ramsey County undersheriff, he had described it as a dramatic increase in carjackings. So I'm just wondering, is there, when I think of an uptick, I think of a slight change from a baseline. When I hear the description of dramatic increase in carjackings, that to me suggests much larger increase in the rapid rate of crime growth here. Is there any baseline that could be compared carjackings maybe from a 5-year, 3-year standpoint to the present day?
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Lucero. I don't have that data. I mean, I suppose if you want to debate the use of an adjective, we can do that right now. But I think the point is that we're talking about an increase, whether you want to call it an uptick, dramatic increase, something else. The fact of the matter is we're here to meet that moment right now and deal with it with this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Mueller, if I recall, your comment was that, in fact, it is an urgent moment. And in the spirit of good legislating, I think it's important for us to be responding to urgent moments no matter how those are measured. Representative Johnson.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I did have a follow-up.
Representative Lucero, very quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I appreciate the indulgence. I'm not looking to debate adjectives, but as you know, I'm a somebody who has a healthy distrust of government and one who has been on the front lines of trying to increase data privacy. And so I have genuine concerns about this bill of tracking. And so what I'm trying to establish, and it's a fair answer if Representative Mueller doesn't have the answer, as I'm debating whether to support or not support this bill, I'm genuinely seeking to know what if the number of 23 per day is the present day in February of 2022, what does it compare to a year ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago? And again, I'm coming at this from a data privacy perspective is the motivation for my question, not to debate adjectives, but a dramatic increase versus a slight increase is what I was trying to get at. And it's fair if she doesn't know the answer, I totally.
Very well. Representative Mueller, anything to add?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. No, that 23 number didn't come from me. Representative Lucero, so I think maybe you heard that from somewhere else. But I mean, it is a good question to find out what are the numbers. And so I'm happy to try to gather that information and provide it and at least have it available for the next committee stop.
And a good reminder, no doubt, members, that our decisions should be heavily guided by good data collection, across our systems, including our public safety systems. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Mueller. I believe this is a good bill. We need to act on this quickly, get it to judiciary and get it to the general register and out as soon as possible. We've had a dramatic increase in stolen vehicles. And not just stolen vehicles, armed robbery of vehicles in the carjackings. We need to get it going quick. We are at, right now, the last numbers I heard a couple of days ago, we are at 27 plus stolen vehicles or carjacked vehicles a day across the state. So this is something that's urgently needed. It's getting worse every day, and we need to get this on the floor and to the Senate as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. And Representative Mueller, I guess you get the last words here before we return to Representative Frazier's motion.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Mariani. And thanks for your comments, Representative Johnson. This is an urgent moment. And I would just note to those prior questions, too, about the numbers. And that is important, and we should get that. But this is good policy, regardless of those numbers, because the bottom line is we're saving people's lives. We're protecting those innocent drivers who are on the road. We're protecting those law enforcement officers who are met with these pursuits. And we're protecting the people in the cars who sadly and tragically often get injured or killed in these high-speed chases. So with that, members, I really thank you for your support today.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. And I'm not on your bill yet, but I'll be adding my name onto it hopefully soon. It's appropriate for us to respond quickly with the sense of urgency that the moment calls on us to respond. And I also want to thank your testifier, Ramsey County Undersheriff Mike Martin, for helping to shape this approach, but also for his expectation and law enforcement's expectation of our legislature to help provide them with the tools to be able to handle this urgent issue. With that, members, Representative Frazier renews his motion that House File 2910, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Judiciary. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier?
Aye.
Lee Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Grossel?
Aye.
Representative Hollins?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn?
Aye.
Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Lucero?
No.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Novotny?
Novotny aye. Novotny aye.
Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill aye.
Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Vang?
Aye.
Representative Shung?
Aye.
And that concludes roll call with 18 ayes and one nay.
Very well. On a vote of 18 ayes and one nay, House File 2910, as amended, is referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Thank you, Representative Boulder. Fine work on this bill. Thank you to the testifiers. And we'll now, and good luck in the judiciary. It should be a good conversation there as well. Thank you, members, for the good debate here today. Members, next we have House File 2958. Representative Pinto, you have a motion before us.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I move that House File 2958 be passed and re-referred to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee, I believe is the correct next stop.
That's what I have as well. Very well. Members, Representative Pinto moves House File 2958 be referred to the Committee on Human Services and Finances. Representative Pinto, your bill is before us. There is an amendment. Do you wish to act on that now or later?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I believe that there are two authors' amendments, and I'd like act on each of them. Yeah, and my apologies to you and probably to the clerk, especially, who have to write up the minutes that regarding those. Yes, if I can move, I'm not sure. Let me see the amendment number, Mr. Chair, for the first one. You may have that. I guess the A1 amendment. I would move the A1 amendment, and I'm happy to explain that.
Very well. Representative Pinto moves adoption of the A1 amendment to House File 2958. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So members, this amendment and the next one just make some small changes to the membership of the task force that I'll be describing to you when I describe the bill. Some stakeholders come to me with to express concerns that got addressed in the one amendment. And then after that was posted, some folks came about the second amendment. And so I asked for your support to simply put the bill in my preferred form so I can share it with you.
So Representative Pinto, my understanding is this shapes up the bill the way you wish to have it before us?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Discussion? Representative Johnson, voice vote?
That's fine.
Very well. All in favor of the Pinto A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and House File 2958 is amended with the A1 amendment. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do indeed, and it's the same description as the A1 amendment, and I ask for member support.
And same description, meaning task force?
Mr. Chair, yes. So this, too, is a change requested by a stakeholder group to the task force contained in the bill. This will put the bill in the form that I wish, and it would have been as part of that First Amendment, but I just got the stakeholder information at different times. It didn't quite line up.
Got it. Understood. Discussion? Representative Johnson, voice vote on this one?
That would be fine.
Very well. Thank you, sir. All in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and House File 2958 is amended with the A2 amendment. Representative Pinto, your bill has amended before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So House File 2958 would establish a task force on the statewide response to substance abuse. And as you'll see as you look at the bill, that there's members from a wide variety of perspectives and other details and duties. I want to just provide some context for members that the background here is the recognition that that what our state and many other states are doing in response to substance abuse While there are many heroic efforts, if we're going to measure our efforts by the idea that people are not, in fact, abusing substances and getting addicted to abusive substances, so then in that way, our efforts are failing. And so the thought is, as has been true in many other issues, that if we can get some folks from a wide variety of perspectives together, have them step away and work together and then come on back, they can hopefully give us a sense of, are there some other approaches that we should be taking? I want to make sure that the members are aware and noticing that there are health and human services perspectives on this task force. And then, of course, there are very much criminal justice system perspectives as well, and that I make no guess as to precisely where these experts end up landing as far as whatever changes that there may be necessary to our laws and to our broader approaches. This came about initially with me thinking, as someone who prosecutes crimes in this area, and I've charged violation of controlled substance law crimes at every level. And so I come at it from a particular perspective there, but recognizing that we really need to step back and think very broadly. So members will see, starting at line 3.8, a series of duties of the task force about the kinds of analysis that is expected to be collected and to be analyzed regarding the various responses from a law enforcement perspective and judicial system and prosecutorial and corrections and human services and health. Et cetera, and to receive input from community, which is enormously important, and then to make recommendations to us. We've tried to give a fair amount of time for those recommendations to come in. And so members, that is where that stands, and it's fairly straightforward for now, and then we'll see what those recommendations are when they come back. But I'm eager to have a conversation with members of this committee as to their thoughts and their questions. And so that's what I have, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Let's have that conversation, and thank you for walking us through the bill. Let's begin with Representative Polston.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. My question is for the bill author, Representative Pinto. Representative Pinto, I don't see a definition of substance in your bill. It does say strictly illegal drugs, but does that include prescription drug abuse? Does it include alcohol? Can you just tell us that, please?
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Poston. The reference, the intended reference is to controlled substances and controlled substance offenses. And I might ask if Mr. Diebel or Mr. Johnson can help. I should say the intent of Representative Poston would not be to include that I did not have in mind alcohol or tobacco, for example, but certainly could include prescription drugs, which are, of course, controlled substances. But it may be that our House research researchers are able to help kind of shape up my answer and provide a little bit. And it may be that there's some wording, as you can probably sense, would think Representative Poston and members, this will have to move through a couple committees. So we may, this is its first committee stop, so there may be just some language tweaking we identify. But Mr. Chair, if you're okay with that, I'd love to have Mr. Diebel or Mr. Johnson provide any thoughts.
Sounds good. It's certainly always important to, and thank you, Representative Poston, to have our legislative intent articulated, you know, in our hearings. For either one of our House research staff.
Mr. Chair, this is Ben Johnson.
Very well, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pinto, Representative Poston, and members. Representative Poston is correct. It does not specifically say that it needs to be any sort of controlled substance in here. It is general at the moment and refers to substances that could include items outside the scope of simply controlled substances on our state or federal controlled substances list.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, this may be for Mr. Johnson a little bit, but I know the phrase controlled substances appears in quite a lot of the bill. And I guess I want to confirm with him that that phrase is essentially defined and that the state does have a list of controlled substances in the statute. I guess, Mr. Chair, if you're willing to have Mr. Johnson just confirm that.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pinto, that's correct. Both the state and the federal government classify substances, and controlled substances are those that are listed as controlled substances. It's in Chapter 152. It goes on for many pages.
And Mr. Pinto, I represent Pinto, rather, and I apologize. I take it that you're suggesting the language as constructed is then clearer relative to that definition that currently exists in state statute.
Hey, Mr. Chair, correct. I think what I'm noticing is that quite a lot of the bill references controlled substances, and that is the goal. I think there's a few spots where the word substance appears, like in line 1.9. It says abuse substances or commit controlled substance offenses, and so that may be Representative Polston, I think, has put his finger on a slight tightening that I would want to make as the bill moves forward to just make clear that we're talking about controlled substances rather than simply. And again, that phrase appears at various points in the bill, but I want to make sure that it appears consistently throughout the bill. So I appreciate Representative Poston raising that.
Representative Poston.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Thank you, Chair Mariani. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the author, I've got a question. How do you see this bill, once it's in place, how will this bill be affected by House File 600, which did pass off the floor? That's the recreational marijuana bill. Will there need to be somebody from, because that bill, HF 600, creates another organization, will this bill need to be amended to include someone from the legalized marijuana bill task force or the group that was created there? And if so, that would then, this leads to the second part of the question. Right now, I think I've got the number correct. It's going to create 18 members on this task force. In general, how many members are on these task forces before it gets to be the point where there's, you know, so many members that it becomes unwieldy? I'll ask the question that way. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So two questions, Representative Benton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Raleigh. Two great questions. I'd like to take them in reverse order. So first, I will say that I do think as task forces get bigger, it does become more and more unwieldy. I've certainly seen some have been significantly bigger than 18. It starts getting, I will say candidly that as even as the stakeholders were contacting me, one of those amendments did add an additional person. I do start getting concerned. They actually, I'll say, had suggested possibly adding two and said, well, wait a second, it's starting to get bigger. So that's a concern. To your question number one, then, about House File 600 and the legalization of adult use cannabis, I guess a couple points on that. To the extent that removes cannabis from the controlled substance list and recognizes, and this isn't the time for that debate, but I'll just note that, you know, if you consider the harm and addiction, et cetera, I think there is a pretty good argument. Just when you think about alcohol and tobacco and cannabis, we can compare them in some different ways. But in any case, if that were to be taken out, to my mind, that would then not be a controlled substance that would fall under the bill, to represent Poston's point. Obviously, we got a bunch of steps down the road before we get there. And, you know, even at 18 people, there are a number of organizations that would not necessarily have a direct representation on this. I don't know that it would make sense to have someone from that particular board. But again, there are quite a few. I'm sure we could together brainstorm 100 possible organizations that could have direct representation. The important thing is that these be general representatives and that they take a lot of input from community, which the duties list that they do. So, but those are great, two great points. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Pinto, you brought up a really good definition. If HF 600 does go through and it becomes law, previously, I want to make sure that I heard this one. We're going to be looking at the definition of a controlled substance, both at the state and the federal definition. Is that true?
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Raleigh, well, I should say, I'm no expert. I'm not an expert on HF 600. So I guess the point would be that this bill ties to the definition of a controlled substance under state law. And again, I'll have Mr. Johnson, Ben Johnson, jump in if that would be wrong. But the reference throughout the controlled substance really is intended to reference that state law list of controlled substances. So we in Minnesota have control over our own, you know, our own laws, of course, if that makes sense.
And Mr. Johnson, just to double check, we are talking within the reference of this bill, definitions that exist exclusively under state law.
Mr. Chair, members,
that's essentially correct. Unless there's a reference to the federal controlled substances list, it'll be the state controlled substances list. That's in chapter 152.02. I'll just add that those two lists are nearly identical. They may not be exactly identical. They get amended at different times, but there is regularly a bill to amend the state schedule every few years. And that's done largely to harmonize it with any changes at the federal level.
Very well. Thank you, sir. Representative Ollie?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Thank you. Representative Johnson?
Chair Mariani, Representative Pinto. I like the concept of this bill, and I especially like the part at 3.16, because it's something I think this legislature needs to start looking at. The charging decisions and especially the plea bargains where reduced sentences are provided. So we have a better understanding who's allowing these, whether lower that, because we have about 40% of our cases are downward departures in sentencing across the state, and we've got to figure out why, where it's coming from. This is a good start. But I think we should also include alcohol in there. Alcohol is one of the biggest causes of death on our highways. The abuse of alcohol is huge across this state. I'm talking from somebody that has a brother that is an alcoholic. Done massive issues to his health. But I've also been the officer on the scene where the fatal crash is due to alcohol-related driving. So I think we should have alcohol in there, make sure that those sentences as well, for those who are especially drinking and driving, intoxicated driving, DWI, those should be looked at, and double check and see what some of the charging decisions are made in the plea bargains and some of these issues, because some of these sentences that I've seen have been all over the board just in my county alone, and I think we need to also have a good understanding of that. Thank you.
Representative Pencil, alcohol, certainly a huge presence in our society, and one that unfortunately plays a harmful role. It's abuse, especially on our roads. I have a brother-in-law who's a retired now sheriff in Arizona, and some of the horror stories that he can share relative to the harm, destruction, and death caused on the road with the abuse of alcohol is just astonishing. But Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, and many thanks to Representative Johnson for raising that, because that is an excellent point. I guess it's maybe the flip side of Representative Poston's point before. As I said, my intent on this had been focused on controlled substances and the ones falling in that list. And I'll say that absolutely in my work as a prosecutor, I've seen tremendous harm from alcohol. In many of the domestic situations I've been involved, I've prosecuted have had alcohol as a factor. I guess I'll note that this is an example, though, of where our society has made a decision that with alcohol, we're going to regulate in one particular way. To the question about House File 600, marijuana, at the moment, our society is regulating in this different way, and we can make some comparison of the harms there. I think there's a pretty good argument in favor of legalization there. That's a different point. And this question of what do we do with some of these other controlled substances. So I think the broader a lens that we can have, the bigger a look, and the more we can get some folks like listed here together looking at this makes a lot of sense. So I will consider the idea of expanding this to alcohol. I also just want to note for Representative Johnson that I'd be happy to talk, again, as somebody who prosecutes these sorts of cases, I'd be happy to talk at any time with him or any other member about certainly what I'm seeing in terms of how cases get handled when it comes to either DWI or with drug laws. I think there's a very strong, I guess, what I see the prosecutors in the state doing, I think there's a great justification for in terms of what I'm able to see. And again, happy to talk with any member at any point about that. Thanks.
Okay, very well. Representative Johnson, you were through, I take it? Yes.
Yes, sir, just with comment.
All right, very well. Very well, Representative Pinto, last comments, and then we'll move to vote on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, I really appreciate the conversation about this. I guess I maybe, I'm going to come at this from a slightly different perspective than you might expect. Just to note, I was talking to a fairly junior colleague earlier today who was talking about having the experience of working with advocates on bills. And just I'll just note that you'll see this is something where I had an idea. I worked with our amazing researchers and thought there's a need for this, and really appreciated the conversation among members to make the bill stronger as the process goes along. And that is, it's a great aspect of being a legislature together. So I appreciate you're all the conversation we've had, and I really hope that we can take a strong look at these laws. So thank you so much, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Representative Pinto, for bringing us your bill. This is an issue that, regardless of our political, parties, we continue to struggle and wrestle with, and appropriately so, in this legislature. Hopefully, this task force can provide us some updated ways in which to think about and approach this very difficult issue. With that, members, Representative Pinto renews his motion that House File 2598, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Human Services Finance. All right. I want to make sure I had that motion correct. I don't see any objection.
My apologies, Mr. Chair. I suddenly spaced out. Yes, that is correct.
I saw a skeptical look on your face. I thought, wait a minute, get that right. All right. So, with that, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier?
Aye.
Lee Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Grossel?
Aye.
Representative Hollins?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn?
Aye.
Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Lucero?
Yes.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, aye.
Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Vang?
Aye.
Representative Shung?
Aye.
And that concludes roll call with 19 ayes.
Very well. In a vote of 19 ayes and 0 nays, House File 2598 as amended. The motion prevails, and House File 2598 as amended is referred to the Committee on Human Services Finances. Thank you, Representative Pinto, and thank you, members, for today's a discussion on this bill. With that, members, we have House File 3120. We cannot move House File 3120. The chair did not appropriately get this in on time for us to be able to do that in terms of listed, but I think it's important for us to hear from this bill. This is Representative Miller's bill. There are several testifiers. My hope is that when we come back next week, we'll then be able to take formal action on House File 3120. So this is really an informational hearing at this point, since no motions can be made. With that, Representative Miller, to your bill, House File 3120.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, and thank you for allowing me to present this bill today. I, too, apologize that procedurally we're going to have to vote on this, not we, you guys will have to vote on this next Tuesday. I did talk with my testifiers, and I do promise that we'll be to the point and brief. This is not particularly a complicated bill. There may be some questions that take some time, but we can present it pretty quickly. So my bill is to form an anti-labor trafficking work group to bring to the legislature recommendations to address the problem. Now, members, we as a body have a history of forming these working groups when we have rather large societal issues and some complex things to deal with it. In 2011, the Republican House and Republican Senate took information from a working group like this and created Safe Harbor, No Wrong Door, an anti-sex trafficking of youth program. And then in 2019, Representative Moeller and I actually jointly together brought forward a motion that was passed in a Democrat House and a Republican Senate, a working group to identify legislation that we need to bring forward for, sexual assault. The reason for a working group and treating this separate from safe harbor, there may be some questions later on that, but the reason why we really believe we need to do this is that there are similarities to sex trafficking and labor trafficking, but there's also differences. And we don't believe that we can just conform some of the law to address this. And we think there's some important questions that need to be addressed with that. And I'm really confident that through this working group, we can identify those differences, bring them to the legislature so that the legislature can choose how to affect laws to address this growing problem. So to get right to my testifiers, I do have three. They have promised that they'll get to the point. I'm confident that they will. But, Mr. Chair, if I could, I'd first like to bring forward Bukola Oriola, who's from an organization called End a Time Story. And these testifiers, I think, will help explain why we're going, where we're going, and what the roadmap is.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Miller. Ms. Bukola Oriola, please come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your testimony, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlos Mariana, members of the committee. My name is Bukola Oriola, Executive Director of the Eniton Story, a survivor-led nonprofit organization with a mission to advocate for victims and empower survivors of human trafficking and domestic violence, located in Fridley. I also served on the U.S. Advisory Council on Human Trafficking for two consecutive terms under President Obama and President Trump's administrations. I would like to express my profound gratitude to Representative Tim Miller for championing this cause as the chief author, Representative Kelly Moeller and Representative Dave Pinto for co-authoring the bill to create a work group that will enable stakeholders to assess the needs on labor trafficking in our state and make recommendations to the legislature. In addition, I would like to thank the committee members for all your hard work on eliminating human trafficking in Minnesota, especially your work on sex trafficking. I am testifying today to highlight the issue of labor trafficking. The Eniton story was founded as a result of my own personal experience as a victim of labor trafficking in Anoka County. I was enslaved for 2 years working while someone else was taking my pay. I was in my 20s with a newborn when I suffered emotional, physical, and psychological abuse in the hands of my trafficker. Upon getting help, I decided to put my face to my story to help others. In 2018, the Eniton story received funding as a partner under an Office for Victims of Crime grant through the Minnesota Department of Health to provide direct services to youth experiencing labor trafficking. During the implementation of the 2-year grant, we reached over 10,000 Minnesotans through outreach and over 100 trainings to service providers and government agencies at the local and state levels. However, we realized that many were coming across victims of labor trafficking, but did not know that they were victims because they did not know what to look out for. This led us to apply for the Bush Foundation Community Innovation Grant with the support of MDH to raise awareness and the consciousness of Minnesotans to recognize labor trafficking. Minnesota has done a great job at recognizing sex trafficking and sexual exploitation through the Safe Harbor. However, there is more we can do to meet the needs of all human trafficking victims. Labor trafficking happens to both youth and adult Minnesotans, but there are not services available to them, even when they are identified. It will be helpful to our community and state at large to provide comprehensive services to victims and survivors of labor trafficking by filling the gaps that exist in the system. The working group will help many stakeholders to come together and identify the gaps while working together towards solutions. In May 2019, the legislature passed the Minnesota Wage Theft Prevention Act to create additional protections for workers, including adding criminal penalties for employers that commit wage theft, which occurs when employers do not pay their workers what is owed them for the work they have performed. This is an important step to helping us identify labor trafficking. I would like to thank you again in anticipation of your support of this bill, and we'll be willing to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Ms. Oniola, for your testimony, and also thank you for your work in this vitally important issue and area for us. Representative Miller, can I call on your next witness?
Yeah, absolutely, Mr. Chair. Our next witness will testify will be Caroline Palmer of the Minnesota Department of Health.
Very well. Ms. Palmer, please come forward, state your name for the record, and provide us with your testimony, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Mariani and members of the committee. My name is Caroline Palmer, and I am the Safe Harbor Director in the Injury and Violence Prevention Section at the Minnesota Department of Health. I wish to thank Representative Miller for introducing this bill and for your leadership in helping to strengthen the statewide response to human trafficking. I would also like to thank Representatives Pinto and Mueller and Chair Becker-Finn for their support of this bill. Representative Miller noted, in 2011, the legislature made an important investment in developing a statewide response to the sex trafficking and exploitation of youth. After a three-year planning period called No Wrong Door, the Safe Harbor response was implemented and housed according to statute in MDH, recognizing the significant impact on the health and well-being of youth. From the beginning, however, the Safe Harbor response has operated in coordination with dozens of multidisciplinary partners, including community-based grantees, tribal nations, and on the state level, the Department of Public Safety through the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and Office of Programs, as well as the Department of Human Services through the Office of Economic Opportunity and Child Protective Services. Over the past 10 years, Safe Harbor has grown in many ways to meet the needs of survivors, and we appreciate very much the consistent commitment from the legislature in supporting this development. What has been developed in this state is often described as a model for the nation, and we find ourselves called upon often to inform the work of other states. As Safe Harbor has developed and grown its sex trafficking and exploitation, we've also become more aware of the impact labor trafficking and exploitation has in our communities as well. We know that labor trafficking and exploitation remains a largely hidden issue, and yet it happens throughout the state. Sometimes labor trafficking and sex trafficking are co-occurring issues for victims, including homeless youth, who are often exploited in unsafe work situations. And Safe Harbor grantees have become increasingly aware of the relationship between these harms. The Office for Victims of Crime in the United States Department of Justice has recognized Minnesota's leadership through two improving outcomes for child victims of trafficking grants that were awarded to MDH, and this support has helped us start to look more closely at the impacts of labor trafficking, for example. Under this grant, we have the Department of Human Services, which has developed guidance for responding to victims of labor trafficking through the child protection system. And the BCA, another partner, Trafficking Investigators Task Force, has worked on labor trafficking protocols for law enforcement, which you'll hear about in a moment in greater detail from Commander Bobby Joe Pasternak. In these ways, MDH Safe Harbor Program has served a coordinating role for Minnesota's statewide multidisciplinary human trafficking response. The legislation that is looked at today would leverage that existing network and collaborative role for another area of human trafficking that we know affects Minnesota. The working group in this proposed legislation will provide an opportunity to bring together all relevant stakeholders, both within and beyond Safe Harbor, to create a collaborative and comprehensive strategy for responding to labor trafficking and exploitation in the state. The strategy will be reported back to the legislature with recommendations for potential action. The safe harbor structure provides a successful existing model upon which to build a statewide response that will expand the potential ways we can all work together to meet the needs of labor trafficking victims and continue to improve our response to sex trafficking victims as well. Thank you very much for your consideration today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Palmer. And next, we have Mr. or Ms., I'm not quite sure, Bobby Joe, and I apologize, Bobby Joe Pasternak. Please come forward with your stating your name for the record and your testimony as well.
Good afternoon, Chair Mariani and members of the committee. My name is Bobby Joe Pasternak, and I am the Assistant Special Agent in charge of the Predatory Crime Section at the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. I am also the commander of the Minnesota BCA-led Minnesota Human Trafficking Investigators Task Force. I'd like to thank Representative Miller for introducing this bill and supporting the efforts to strengthen Minnesota's response to human trafficking, as well as Representative Pinto, Representative Moeller, and Chair Becker Finn for their support of this bill and continued work to eradicate human trafficking in Minnesota. In 2017, as a result of legislative funding allocated for sex trafficking investigations, the Minnesota Human Trafficking Investigators Task Force was created as a statewide task force to respond to human trafficking investigations across Minnesota. Our task force joins Minnesota's most experienced investigators and prosecutors to combat human trafficking in all its forms, including sex and labor trafficking. Task force partners can participate in the task force in different ways. We have full-time members of the task force that include St. Paul Police Department, Minneapolis Police Department, the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, Anoka County Sheriff's Office, our federal partners at the Homeland Security Investigations, Ramsey County Attorney's Office, and we have an embedded victim advocate through partnerships with the Minnesota Department of Health, Safe Harbor, and The Link, which is a sex trafficked or sexually exploited youth victim service provider. We come together every day at the BCA to work human trafficking investigations and to support the victims of these crimes. The task force also partners with law enforcement agencies all across the state of Minnesota through a task force affiliate program. This program allows law enforcement agencies across Minnesota to attach to our task force on a case-by-case basis. They activate all the resources of the task force in support of their investigations. In total, the Minnesota Human Trafficking Investigators Task Force supports approximately 50 law enforcement agencies across the state, many of them in greater Minnesota and rural communities. And all of the efforts create a true border-to-border response. Human trafficking investigations are some of the most complex and resource-intensive investigations done within the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and require a holistic approach with all of the systems working together. For this reason, from its inception, the task force has collaborated with the Safe Harbor Infrastructure and the Department of Human Services, Child Welfare and Child Protective Services, while consistently engaging with community outreach programs and leaning on our valued survivor leadership. Sex trafficking investigation funding has been a priority at the legislature, resulting in increased awareness with so much great work done to eradicate this heinous crime of predators preying on the vulnerabilities of their victims. Labor trafficking, another type of human trafficking, has not had the same investment or increased awareness, though it shares many similarities with sex trafficking. In both cases, predators prey on the vulnerabilities of victims to exploit them for their own personal gain. And in both cases, victim survivors may face horrible physical and psychological assaults. Unfortunately, the lack of awareness means that the crime of labor trafficking is severely underidentified and underreported, resulting in fewer criminal investigations and prosecutions. Through a grant awarded to Minnesota Department of Health from the Office for Victims of Crimes in the United States Department of Justice, the Minnesota BCA has collaborated with the Department of Health and the Advocates for Human Rights to bring a focus to labor trafficking and to lead a protocol development group to provide a victim-centered statewide law enforcement response to labor trafficking. This is a three-year project commenced in July of 2020, and it's broken down into three phases. Phase one was the development of the work group to include identifying members of expertise from all of the important systems to include law enforcement, prosecutors, victim service providers, medical professionals, child protection welfare, labor exploitation groups, and the important and strong survivorship voices, such as Ms. Oriola. Phase two was the actual development of protocols that included three different law enforcement responses, our patrol officer response, investigations response, and a response for police administrators. We just completed phase two, and we are awaiting for the Office of Victims of Crime approval of these protocols. Next, we will move into phase three, which will entail training and protocol implementation. This will include regional trainings across our state to provide Minnesota law enforcement with the ability to not only identify labor trafficking, but to respond in a victim-centered way to assist victim survivors, as well as be able to investigate this crime. It was through this protocol development of the law enforcement response that a large and detrimental gap was identified. The protocol development group had the collaborative expertise, as noted earlier, to be able to produce these protocols, to identify this crime, produce a victim-centered approach, and teach investigators how to proceed. But when it came to providing victim services and resources to victims of labor trafficking, there were little to no services or resources specific to those needs. While the group is able to teach Minnesota law enforcement to recognize, respond, and investigate labor trafficking, there are extremely limited resources to actually assist the victim survivors once they have been removed from labor trafficking situations. There is no comprehensive infrastructure to support labor trafficking victim survivors, such as that set forth by the Safe Harbor Regional Navigator System for sex trafficking victim survivors. If we can think about this for a minute, if a law enforcement officer during their regular routine and duties, and let's just say it's in rural Minnesota, and as it usually happens in the middle of the night, identifies a labor trafficking situation, this officer is able to remove individuals from the hands of traffickers. Now what? There are extremely limited resources specific to the individual's needs, and Ms. Oriola alone, and trust me, I've worked with her for a long time, I know she would if it were humanly possible, but she cannot support all labor trafficking victims across Minnesota. This working group proposed in this legislation would be a collaborative effort to build an inclusive strategy to bring a victim-centered response to labor trafficking and exploitation in our state, addressing the lack of supports currently available to victim survivors of labor trafficking. Thank you for your consideration of this bill, and I am happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Commander, for your testimony. We have about 6 minutes left discussion. Representative Miller, the intent will be to bring this up as a motion next week and quickly move this. I think the motion at that time will be to move it to another committee, and I'm thinking maybe judiciary. I'm forgetting our conversation.
Mr. Chair, just that you're close. This bill is going to go, if it's approved, it's going to go to the Committee on Human Services Finance. And then is probably going to reside, long story short, because we're short on time, but it's going to probably end up in the health finance committee. There's some, it's been talked that some other committees may want to look at it, but from here it goes to human services.
You'll have plenty of opportunities to have lots of good conversations in the coming weeks. That Representative Johnson. Representative Johnson, you might be muted if you're attempting to speak.
I'm getting tired of Zoom meetings. Always forgetting to unmute. Chair Mariani, Representative Miller, I have a strong suspicion that with after the testimony today and with what this is about, I believe many of my members are going to have questions. And I know we're very, very short on time, we had not even been able to begin to get into it. So I think I'm going to ask Chair Mariani if we can have Representative Miller back next week when we come back so we can get some of these questions answered. Because right now, after the testimony, my head is spinning with so many different questions I have to ask of Representative Miller. I'm not sure where to begin. So with that, I'd like to, when we lay this over, be able to have a good amount of time. There's not enough time to actually do the questions right now because we're down to about 3 minutes left of our committee time.
Members, we have 5 minutes. I would strongly encourage you to ask your questions right now. We have a very busy schedule next week. This bill will be heard in at least two other committees and possibly more. And so this legislature is going to have plenty of opportunities to have this conversation. Representative Johnson?
Well, then I'll get started. One of the things that's interesting is this, where was it? The commissioner of, trying to find some of my notes here. I believe it was the commissioner of human services supposed to convene this meeting, but the commissioner is not listed as a member. And I would think that would be it. If the person is convening it, they should be a member of this committee. And
I was just trying to get to a question here. So the question is the commissioner's absence on the task force.
And I can answer that, but I'll let him finish his question first. I can answer that.
And as Representative Pinto mentioned, getting a task force too large, they don't work well. Right now we're at, I believe it's 27 to 29 members on this task force already. And putting that commissioner on, that makes it 30. But all the task forces I've been involved with and worked with, if they get above 15 to 17, it's really difficult to get a lot of work done. And we're pushing double that. The other concern I have listening to the testimony, especially of the from the BCA, it sounds like this task force is already operational. And now they want funding for it. And I think I'm going to start really digging into that. If that's what's happening, we have problems.
Mr. Chair, with 1 minute left, I can answer, at least partially address. I have no problem. I want to respect your. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I respect your decision of how you run your committee. I have no problem either next week or anyone can call me with these, but I can address those three things pretty quickly, I think. Number one, Representative Johnson, you touched on a very accurate thing. We had, again, for the sake of time, this was written as going through the Department of Human Services. In the conversations that we had, we have an amendment coming in the next committee to flip that over to the Department of Health, and it'll have the language that will adjust accordingly. That'll be in the Department of Health, and then the Department of Human Services will have a representative in this group. The second point was, I'm blanking on it real quick. Real quick, what was the second one, Representative Johnson?
It was the size of the...
size of the committee. Yeah, so that's a valid concern. We had a meeting late yesterday afternoon, Remember, this is full intention to go through a handful of committees. Not that you don't have it tight in the first committee, but the advantage is that if you see troubles, you can adjust it into the next committee. And I'm more than happy to address that here. I agree. I think it's cumbersome. We also got wise advice from research that the definition of the members needs to be tightened up. And we'll certainly do that. I take that advice very wisely. I kind of go down the road when I have participation. I start out broad. I referred to it, as I told Carrie Mariani last night, I follow the Carrie Mariani rule of being inclusive with everyone, and the kitchen sink to be on something as important as this, but we can certainly tighten that up. And then as far as this being some sort of move for money, actually the reason why we brought it into a working group is because it would have been exactly what you're suspecting if I just came with a bill that said X millions of dollars to do this. What the commander referenced, what they're doing, just to clarify, they are doing very good work here, but this is a little bit different what this working group is going to be doing. This is specifically to address the specific needs of labor trafficking. What the commander is talking about is that they're looking at trafficking as a whole. I know this is kind of slicing and dicing, but that's the whole difficulty with this. There's a lot of people that say sex trafficking, labor trafficking, isn't it the same thing? No, it's really not. And if we have state policy that addresses them as the same, we're not going to be helping. We're not going to be doing the things that we intend for us to do. Mr. Chair, I'll yield there. I'm willing to talk to people offline or do whatever you want.
I appreciate your work on this, Representative Miller. You know, this is the Public Safety Committee, and I think for me, what struck me about a good chunk of this testimony was both the distinctiveness, but also the interplay between the different types of trafficking and the predatory nature that consistently exists with human beings being traumatized and hurt in different ways, but with the same kind of intentions here, therefore requiring, our very targeted approaches here. Members, these questions about the makeup of this task force, which will exist in another department not under our jurisdiction, is a question that should be debated, but should be heavily debated in the committee that has direct oversight of that. My hope was really that we would have a conversation about the public safety nature of the work before us. All right, I don't see any other hands up at this point, and we're just over time here. The chair will be bringing, we don't have a motion before us, the chair will be bringing this bill up as early as next week. It is my intent, having heard this excellent discussion debate, that we can have a little bit of conversation, but I do not intend to spend a ton of time on a bill that will eventually need, if it's going to move, needs to move into a more thorough jurisdictional conversation in another committee. Thank you, Representative Miller, for bringing us this bill. I want to thank you, Ms. Odiola, Ms. Palmer, Commander Pasternak, for your testimony, but also for your work and this critically important work. Members, with that, this committee will stand adjourned until our regular meeting time next week, Tuesday. I trust everyone will have a good and warm weekend this week, and this committee stands adjourned.